So as I said, our kids recently started a new curriculum here at UUCSS out in their fellowship building, their superhero hangout. And we started this new curriculum because as much fun as it is to talk about superheroes, we realized that what we really need when we think about how we are centering love and listening to the call of love is something else. That what we need is troublemakers, right? What Bayard Rustin called, as we've mentioned a few times, angelic troublemakers, what our new curriculum calls holy troublemakers, folks willing to make what John Lewis called good trouble, right? I love good trouble, and I love this term, holy troublemakers, because it leaves so much room for humor, room for mistakes, room for trying again when we didn't quite make enough trouble the first time. And room for lots of us to be accomplices and active agents of trouble. Accomplices is a term that one of my mentors, the late great Alandria Williams, who worked for a long time at the Highlander Center where Rosa Parks trained, he said to white UUs, to let go of claiming to be an ally and strive to do the work of being an accomplice instead. I love that. I love that in part because it sounds a bit fun, right? Being an accomplice, like we're part of a heist film working to right injustice in creative and unexpected ways, maybe with a theme song or two playing behind us, right? It's a good reminder that the work of kind of taking on injustice is hard and dangerous, but also fun and rewarding and joyful. That those who came before us had fun and were joyful. Right? When you see Hollywood portrayals of the civil rights movement, it's all very stern and sepia-toned, right? But nobody lives in sepia tones. We live in color. We forget that Reverend Dr. King lived not long ago, that he loved to go swimming, and that he was a huge Star Trek nerd. Right? Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King loved Star Trek. He did not live a life in black and white or sepia tones. He lived in color. And every anti-racist, anti-oppression activist I've ever known, everyone I've known who has decided to commit their life to justice, has been a person committed to joy and sacred silliness as well. And that's true for so many of the greats we like to talk about. Like the theologian Howard Thurman watched the World Series with Dr. King. I just love that these two greats sat around a TV set watching the World Series together. They loved Star Trek. They loved baseball. Dr. Thurman taught himself the clarinet late in life just for fun. And he collected penguin figurines just because he liked them. Right? One of the great justice-centered Unitarian Universalist theologians of the 20th century, James Luther Adams, loved kung fu movies. Joy has to be a part of the work we do and the lives we lead and the trouble we make together. Joy helps us, helps remind us to keep centering love and not hate, right? Joy is a practice that helps us, keeps us centered on love, and holy troublemaking comes from love. The anger that unites and drives us to do things better, to make good trouble, comes from love and not hate, right? And Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was quite the troublemaker himself, right? Sometimes he gets praised so much. We have a whole holiday about him, right? We've got a giant monument on the tidal basin now, right next to the FDR Memorial. Our society often seems to forget with these things how much he was hated, right? How much horrible stuff, how many lies were told about him during his life. He talked about peaceful ends by peaceful means, but doing things with courage and integrity, the way Bayard Rustin, the way Mahatma Gandhi, and the way Quaker values and their deep, deep faith taught them to do, does not mean he was being compliant with systems of power or doing things that people liked, right? Reverend Ayesha Anzano points out that as a society, we tell activists that their protests are too unruly, their demands too harsh, their voices too strident, their methods too stringent. We have decided as a society that there is one way to struggle for justice, and it's the way we like to imagine King struggled for justice, even though it's not the way he actually did. He was considered, the Reverend Dr. King was considered by the FBI to be the most dangerous man in America. And he was far from alone in that work and far from alone in being considered dangerous, right? And this history matters. These stories of troublemaking matter because these are not problems that magically got fixed in the 60s, right? We didn't like cure racism. There's a reason why the same kind of people who hated Dr. King in the 60s are trying to repress the true history of the civil rights movement now, are trying to repress the books about this, even, right? Like trying to convince young people that segregation wasn't that bad, that neither was the mass kidnapping and enslavement of folks from Africa, and neither was the genocide, the ongoing genocide against First Nations people, right? And they want that to disappear because that violence is part of the ongoing struggle in this country, and that history is dangerous to those who want to keep profiting from inequity and inequality and white supremacy. They want us to think these were minor distractions and sepia-toned problems that were gracefully solved, not an ongoing struggle, not something that lives in each and all of us. It's, right? All of us. All of us. Sometimes the people profiting off inequity is folks on the left as well. One of the things Bayard Rustin taught us is that we have to do that internal work, that anti-racism is ongoing work because it's also about what we're dealing with on the inside. None of us are perfect. None of us get to rise smugly above the bigotry baked into our society and its rules and laws and violent capitalism. Capitalism is inherently violent. White folks, you are going to have racist thoughts and accidentally do little microaggressions and profit from white supremacy. What matters is your second thought, right? That first thought is what society is programmed into. That second thought, that's what we practice. That's what we cultivate. That's where we catch it, right? What matters is how you counteract that microaggression and improve your behavior and work to change the systems and apologize when you do harm. What matters is that you refuse to do what is harmful and comfortable. Be dangerous instead. Make trouble, even within yourself. Act from love like Bayard Rustin, refusing to pretend that it was okay he was forced onto the back of the bus, refusing to go into the closet. Make trouble like Rosa Parks. You know, sometimes we think of Rosa Parks like as this person who just sat down because she was tired on a bus. No, this was a deeply intelligent, well-trained, well-educated, well-connected woman who spent her life doing social justice, right? She was on the board of Planned Parenthood. She worked for a congressman. And in her memoir, she wrote, "I wasn't tired when I sat down on that bus, except I was tired of injustice," basically. I don't have the quote right here exactly, right? Like, she didn't sit down because she was tired physically. She sat down because she was tired of injustice. Like Howard Thurman and all of their friends and accomplices. And remember that this can look like a lot of things, right? Like you can be an accomplice to justice in a lot of ways. Sometimes this looks like being in the streets. Sometimes it looks like sitting down with the teenagers or looking after the toddlers or making the pies, showing up at a school board meeting to oppose a book ban. Please show up at school board meetings and oppose book bans. Take bystander training and practice what to do when harm is happening in front of you. We have to practice these things. We have to be committed to never letting that white child on the bus think that racism, homophobia, or systemic injustice in any form is okay, even when they are the law, especially, Especially when injustice and forced ignorance is the law, we have to live into the legacy of the agents and accomplices of the 60s and beyond, knowing that they were hated, knowing that what they did was dangerous, knowing that their troublemaking was also joyful and full of song and solidarity and righteous mischief-making. We don't need superpowers to be agents of change, don't need to fly or shoot laser beams from our eyeballs to be angelic troublemakers. We have all we need, and we are enough, and we are ever becoming something we can only begin to imagine, accomplices and agents for a better tomorrow that lives far beyond ourselves.